Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Thursday, everybody. Sean Cantwell here, your local alternative solid state radio. And I have to lead the show off with this because I'm sure at least a few of you out there watched the same Tigers game that I did last night. And I feel like a lot of you out there probably got a vibe off of that game similar to when the Wings dropped that back-to-back set against the Senators last season right before the trade deadline, right before Steve Yzerman basically blew the entire team up because it had become so obvious that this team was absolutely going nowhere this season. That's kind of where I'm at with the Tigers after whatever the hell that was that we watched last night. Really, though, I feel like we have to start with Tuesday. Tarik Skubal comes back after being gone the entirety of this season thus far, and he puts up a stellar performance. And then he leaves, and Reese Olsen comes in and also puts up a stellar performance. In fact, how good was your pitching on Tuesday night? You literally only gave up two hits on the whole damn game. Skubal didn't end up giving up any hits, as a matter of fact. Olsen only gave up the one. And you would think that that should be enough to get to win you the game. You'd think that. You'd like to think that, certainly. Except that this team can't buy offense but for like one game a week. Like, great. You put up 14 runs against the Rockies on Sunday. Maybe save a little bit of that for, you know, the rest of the week where the bats just don't show up at all. But ultimately, in a game where you only gave up two hits, Oakland only needed one hit to win that game. One of the many reasons I hate the stupid new extra innings ghost runner rule, but it is what it is. So that was bad enough. What happened last night is about enough to wash anybody of the notion that this team's going to contend even in as laughable of a division as the AL Comedy Central. Oakland comes in basically doing a bullpen day. Like, that's what it was. Like, you had a guy who started one game all season, and it was yesterday's game, coming in and pitching scoreless ball for the first three innings of that thing. And it's just a parade of relievers from there. And you allowed that to take the win because now your pitching then responds the next day by getting absolutely rocked. Erod, well, he's not going to be worth a damn thing at the trade deadline from the looks of it. He comes back and promptly gives up five earned runs. And then it just gets even more embarrassing as Zach Logue comes in later in this thing and had already not been doing great. I can't imagine he's going to be around terribly long. And you get your ass handed to you by a poverty team. A team that has basically come out and told you, we're not even trying. We're not going to be here in about 2 years, so none of this matters. We're clearly tanking. We have no interest in even putting forth a competitive baseball team. And you go and let them put 12 effing runs on you. At this point, I don't want to hear another word about how this team can contend for the AL Central. You can't take 2 out of 3 games from the worst team in all of Major League Baseball. You don't deserve to get anywhere near the playoffs. Like, it was a fun ride while it lasted, kids, but let's be adults about this for a moment. This team isn't winning this division. This team only seems to be able to put runs on the board once every 6 days or so. The pitching's there, sure. The pitching, other than Erod's disaster last night, has been, by and large, fairly good when it's not ending up on the disabled list. You've somehow managed to cobble together a rotation, barely. with a few bullpen days throughout, and your bullpen has, by and large, been very good. But when literally nobody in your lineup is hitting, not a whole lot you can do. Other than apparently Matt Vierling and Zach McKinstry somehow. I don't even know how that's possible, but it is. And can I just ask at this point, to AJ Hinch or whoever the hell is making these calls, why is Kerry Carpenter just not in the lineup every effing night? You had two games of this series in which this team lost and couldn't buy a hit. You put Carpenter in until late in the first one and then sit him entirely in this one. I mean, at this point, what the hell are you saving him for? Like, you pinch hit him in the eighth inning, didn't use him at all on Wednesday. What are we doing here? If you seriously believe that this team is contending for something, this team's going to make a playoff push, not a playoff run, because I think we all know that whoever the hell ends up facing the Tigers in the first round is essentially getting a first-round bye. But what the hell are you saving the guy for? Give him basically two straight games off when he's essentially the only reliable hitter in your lineup, not named Matt Vierling? What are we doing here? Basically letting the poverty team of Major League Baseball run roughshod over you on a bullpen day. Embarrassing. Absolutely embarrassing. Everyone involved in this thing should be embarrassed, quite frankly. I'll be honest, I don't care the Tigers are up 9-0 today against them. Where was that 2 days ago? Where was like a single like timely hit on Tuesday? Where was literally anything from the pitching last night? Like, look, I want this team to do as well as any and all of the rest of you out there. I do. Trust me. Doing this, I really want this team to do well. Because otherwise, I have nothing sports-wise until training camp starts. Well, unless another Lions wide receiver does something stupid on social media. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But trust me, I want this team to at least maintain some semblance of competitiveness in this division. Because otherwise, it ain't going to be much of a sports show if I don't have the one team in this town actually trying. Instead of trying my patience like they currently are. I have to say, it's one of those times, though, that I am kind of okay with all the rules that were undertaken to speed up the pace of play of this thing, because the less time I got to spend watching this garbage at this point, the better. Plenty to get to this afternoon. It is happy hour at Solid State Radio. Stick around. Dave Matthews Band on your local alternative, Solid State Radio. What's going on? It is happy hour. Sean Campbell here hanging out with you on a Thursday afternoon, and it seems like a non-story, something that barely even really needs to be brought up. But since everything around one Jameson Williams has been just put under a magnifying glass and scrutinized like crazy since damn near since he got into the league. I mean, these things are going to happen when in two seasons you have all of a catch to your name, are now staring down a suspension for having gambled on team premises and, you know, then really done other stupid things on social media. It's kind of to be expected. The big thing at present is that he was apparently lighting off fireworks at like 1:30 in the morning on 4th of July, apparently, which, to be fair, most of us were out there doing the same damn thing on the 4th of July because it is the effing 4th of July. Which, as far as these things go, okay, probably not that big of a deal other than, oh, great, you're the a-hole setting off fireworks at literal 2 in the morning. Like, up until about midnight, I don't care. I feel like if you're going way late beyond that, then you're kind of an a-hole. I mean, we make the excuse for it on Murkaday, but don't be that guy. That said, what he did in itself wasn't anything egregious. Okay, he was lighting off fireworks. Great. The problem is that now, because of all the stupid things he's done and said on social media, everything he does is going to be scrutinized that much more. And admittedly, probably not smart to be doing that when, well, you make your living with your hands and you're that close to fireworks and you know, within a good position to lose a finger or two. Probably not smart. If the thing I'm making millions of dollars for a year is catching a football, I'm probably not going to try and do anything that could potentially harm my ability to catch a football. But that's just me. But it really, I feel like, plays into this thing where guys feel the need to, you know, put their every thought, everything they do, overshare everything on social media. And honestly, I feel like the best thing that any athlete, any person in the public sphere of that sort could probably do is just get the hell off the social media entirely. It's not really going to do you that much good compared to the bad that it can do if you do something really stupid, like, say, get suspended for gambling and then are immediately on video in Vegas the next night, or posting as a wide receiver that you want a new quarterback in town when you've caught all of one football the entire time you have been a professional football player. Things like that. And seems a trend with a lot of people, and certainly athletes aren't exempt from it, when it comes to oversharing your thoughts on social media to a point where you basically have players now having their contract negotiations in public, which doesn't really serve anybody well and really only serves to have more, you know, messier splits and more hard feelings between people and teams and whatnot than if they just would have, everyone would have shut their yap and had their negotiations behind closed doors. Lord knows I've been as guilty of it as anybody. I'm not going to sit here and try and tell you otherwise because I know I could surely get called out for that. But I've even backed off of the social media quite a bit over the last couple of years. I mean, I'm still on Facebook, but 90% of the things I post, if you follow me on Facebook, are either about this show or one of my other, you know, employment endeavors in some capacity, whether it's band stuff or, you know, the day job or whatever. And on Twitter, I post maybe once every couple of years or so. I don't even know why I still have the damn thing. I don't really check it or scroll through it or anything unless I'm trying to get a band or somebody to respond for a station event or something and they don't have a Facebook page. It's really almost more for work purposes at this point than anything. Because at some point you just realize no one really cares about every random thought that goes through your head, every minute part of your day, and it's not really necessary to post all of those things for the entire world to see, and that all you're really going to bring on yourself is just more scrutiny and more people looking at you under a microscope and judging you for whatever you might post anyway. Like, for Christ's sake, there are people who are apparently upset that the dude was posted in a video at a Coney Island on 6 Mile at, like, late at night after the bars closed or something. So it's apparently bad enough when people post rather innocuous stuff and still manage to get the scrutiny for it. Why bother adding to it, giving them reason to scrutinize you further? But what the hell do I know? Make sure you like, follow me on social media. Here's Youngblood, Solid State Radio. Primitive Radio Gods on Happy Hour at Solid State Radio. So, Philip Zadina, his time with the Red Wings is officially done. It was already seemingly a foregone conclusion when he got placed on waivers the other day, but he has apparently decided that he has no interest in coming back to the team. He wants a fresh start somewhere else. He doesn't want to try and fight for a roster spot this offseason. So he is getting waived again. His contract will be terminated with the team. I think we all should have really seen this coming, though, given that the guy who once threatened he was going to fill every team that didn't draft him's net up with pucks hasn't exactly done that. 28 goals, 40 assists in his career of like 190 games. Hasn't exactly been effective anywhere. They've tried him on the top two lines, and he just doesn't have the speed required, doesn't really have the agility, the athleticism to fit there. But he doesn't have the scrappiness, the grit, the whatever you want to call it, to thrive in the bottom six either. Really a man without a country, ultimately. It is always interesting, admittedly, to see how some of these guys who seem like can't miss guys at the time end up not panning out once they get to the big show. I mean, he put up 82 goals in the Quebec League before he got drafted by Detroit. Didn't end up panning out. Then the guy after him, you know, if you're the Wings, you got to be kicking yourself for not having taken Quinn Hughes instead, who has gone on to be an absolute stud for the Canucks. Just kind of shows you, I guess, how fickle the draft really can be. As far as where he ends up after this, I'm not sure that another team is going to take a flyer on him even. You put him on waivers thinking, hoping somebody would actually claim him, and no one wanted him even for free, apparently. So I'm rather doubtful that he's going to be on an NHL roster by the start of this season. I mean, you never know what could happen. Guys could get injured. You could find himself getting called up at some point. But if he's starting anywhere else, it's probably going to be on a minor league deal at best, I would imagine. I just can't see how a guy that doesn't have the skills to hang on the in the top six and the physicality to hang in the bottom six is going to really find himself on an NHL roster at this point. Hate to see it, but I just don't see it happening. It is Happy Hour at Solid State Radio. Here's Fallout Boy. Bush on Happy Hour. So, of course, the Tigers end up winning today, 9-0. Where was this 2 days ago? Well, we can go back and relitigate that all day, but the fact of the matter is you lost two games and ultimately lost a series to the poverty team to end all poverty teams. You lost basically to the Arizona Coyotes of Major League Baseball. You lost to a team whose city has basically told it, we don't want you anymore, and who has told their city, we don't want you anymore either. A team that has basically not been trying for the last 5 years in an attempt to tank this thing so badly that no one will care when they ultimately just leave and go to Las Vegas. And you managed to put up a combined 17 scoreless innings against that team. Not a single run for 17 straight consecutive innings against a team who just ran out their bullpen in totality on Wednesday night and basically told you, we're not trying. And you still can't put up a run against that. And you want me to believe that there's hope for a playoff chase still. And I would kind of like to know what you guys think on that. Hit us up on the Facebook page or at our new and improved phone number, 810-433-2006. Are you officially, are you abandoning ship yet? Because I'm there. Like, I am the diehard of all, like, baseball diehards, certainly around here. I think there's only really one person on staff here who probably cares more about baseball than I do, and probably the only other person on our staff who watches baseball. And I'm pretty sure even our old pal, the goat boy, Adam Luthi, is just off the train with this damn thing. And I don't blame him. I don't blame anybody, really, who's just kind of decided that, you know what, I'm done with this. It was fun for a while, but I'm done trying to pretend that this team's supposed to be something that they clearly very much aren't, which is a team that has a competent offense in the major leagues. Oh, but they're less than 10 games out from the Twins. Like, who cares? Who do you have really cares? I'm sorry. I can't do it. They're not good. Like, they're not a good baseball team. The pitching is done as much as it can to keep you in, but when you can tee off like one out of every six games and then do absolutely nothing for the rest of it, yeah, 6.5 games out feels like a lot more than that. I don't care if you take 2 or 3 for the Blue Jays this weekend. I still don't see how you come back from this. I don't think you do. You got 3 games coming up against Toronto, a team that sits fourth place in the AL East, admittedly, but has also won 10 more games than you have. So that's not really saying much. The AL East is just as comically, like, just, you know, super villain good as, like, you know, or powerful or whatever as this team is, just laughably weak. So no, I don't give you any chance to take 2 out of 3 in this series. I'm not sure if I give you much of a shot taking 1.
The one place you might is if you can jump all over Alek Manoah, who to this point in the season has a 6.36 ERA and also is just now returning from injury. Maybe you have a chance there. I don't think you can get to Kevin Gausman. I don't really see you getting much to Chris Bassitt either. I don't know if I see you laying more than a hit or two on some of these cats. I really don't. It's sad that this is where we're at, but it is where it is. I got that hope back in me after the Texas Rangers thing. And then only for this to come and happen. Like, this feels to me, and tell me if I'm wrong here, it feels like that point of the Wings season last year where they played those two games against Ottawa, got completely blown out. And it feels like this is the difference between trying to sell whatever you can for whatever spare parts you can get for it and maintaining the status quo. Which, let's be honest, we knew that this team was never going to be buyers. That was never a legitimate possibility. Wasn't going to happen. But at the very least, it seemed like there was a chance that maybe they'd ride this thing out, see how things went after Riley Green got back. But I want to know about you. Are you officially jumping off the bandwagon here? Are you done with this thing as much as I am? Or am I alone on this? Let me know. It is happy hour. It's Solid State Radio. Stick around. This might just be a Florida man story to take well, most of them. This is easily in my top five, I would say. This time, a Florida teen was caught on video chugging a twisted tea with a baby alligator in his hand. Like, I'm not sure if he's trying to use him as a koozie or if he'd used him as a can opener, maybe he's having to bite down like as a shotgun, like kind of thing. Like, has him bite out the side of the thing and then chugs the rest of it. Like, I'm not quite sure what he was going for here. Like, using it as a can opener, you know, what are we in the Flintstones? Ah, it's a living. It all went down in a Hardee's parking lot in Plant City, Florida. The Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission caught wind of the video going viral on social media, where you can see the baby gator biting down on a 24-ounce can of Twisted Tea. And yes, I know what you're thinking, but Florida is a quote-unquote constitutional carry state, so you can have a Twisted Tea in your possession without a permit. The Florida Wildlife Commission had this to say about the whole thing, quote, "The lack of respect and responsibility shown towards this animal was disappointing to see. This serves as a strong reminder of the consequences of such behavior." And after chugging the thing, he just throws the gator right back on the ground. Just right on the pavement. I mean, that seems a little bit much. Like, we're not in the Stone Age. No need, you know, to bash the bird in the head that's serving as your alarm clock or can opener or whatever. That just seems a little bit over the top. As it turns out, though, probably shouldn't have done that, as he ended up getting criminally charged over the whole thing. I think more for the animal cruelty than the, you know, the underage drinking, because, you know, we don't care about that sort of thing. We're Florida, for Christ's sake. In case you were concerned about the gator, though, he ended up being released into a retention pond and being ultimately unharmed and just fine. Maybe a tad bit drunk, but, you know, that just kind of comes with the territory. That twisted tea is probably the least worst thing that gator could have ingested, all things considered. Here's the Wallflowers on Happy Hour. Gaslight Anthem at your local alternative, Solid State Radio. So as if I didn't need another reason to avoid the whole, like, getting on planes and flying thing, apparently you're not even safe on the ground at the damn airport, as apparently a dude started a big old brawl at the ticket counter at Orlando International Airport Tuesday night. According to an arrest affidavit from the Orlando Police Department, an Ohio man involved in a scuffle with an officer ended up getting arrested. Officers went to the ticket counter around 9:30 p.m. to investigate a disturbance, with people becoming aggressive with the Spirit staff and threatening them. In widely shared cell phone footage after officers arrived, a group of passengers and Spirit employees gathered around yelling and screaming. The man in a light shirt and a slacks takes down a uniformed officer, straddling him on the ground as a screaming woman hovers above both of them. Ultimately, two other uniformed officers managed to pull the passenger off the cop and pin him down. Investigators say the guy was arguing with a ticket agent over delays and escalated matters by reaching over the counter and pressing buttons on the worker's computer keyboard. I gotta say, though, even by all the standards of stories that we've told on this show over the years about people getting on airplanes and starting fights and whatever, basically things that have ensured that I'm never getting on a plane again after this upcoming trip I'm taking in November. Like, this is a new one. Never had the brawl just break out while everyone's still on the ground and, you know, at the ticket window. Like, even by Spirit Airlines standards, that in itself is, that's a first. But ultimately, look, no one wants to go through this any more than you do. This is already a miserable experience for most people involved with it, even more so if you're flying Spirit Airlines, evidently. Why make it more difficult on everybody else than it already needs to be? I mean, this experience already sucks. Why make it worse for literally everybody else around you? I mean, expect problems because the airline you're flying, but don't take it out on the staff on the ground. That's just going to make everything worse for everybody else. A public service announcement brought to you by Happy Hour. Here's Mad Season at Solid State Radio. Snarls at your rock alternative, Solid State Radio. What's going on? It is Happy Hour. And we've spent a lot of time over the years on this radio program defending the poor SOBs who have to go out there and deliver food. Like, really, the customer service industry in general, but mostly the people who make and deliver your food. But this kind of thing makes it a little bit hard. A TikTok of an interaction a Texas woman had with a DoorDash driver has gone viral after the delivery man cursed at the customer after what he perceived to be too low of a tip. In the video, the driver seems to suggest that due to the quality of the customer's home, she should have tipped more than the $5 she did on her $20 pizza delivery. The driver can be heard saying, "I just want to say it's a nice house for a $5 tip." As he begins to walk away, the owner thanks him for the delivery before Corey Ford throws in a final curse before the video ends. Can't really play the audio of it, but he tells the homeowner, well, F you, essentially, after that. The woman says she contacted DoorDash, who told the Daily Mail, respectfully asking for a tip is acceptable, but abusing or harassing someone is never acceptable. I don't even know necessarily that, as someone who has spent a lot of time in customer service, I don't think I'd feel comfortable even asking for a tip or bringing it up at all. I mean, certainly the "this is a nice house for a $5 tip" thing would already be over the line as it is. But then to add the little bit at the end there really just puts it over the top, and DoorDash ultimately saw it that way as well, revealing that the driver had been fired. And this is the stuff that really makes it hard for me, because as someone who has been on both sides of the customer service thing, my reaction is usually to defend the driver, the bartender, or the pizza delivery person, or the cook, or whatever. But, you know, you make it real hard to sit here and yell at the people who are, they want $15 an hour, you know, before they go have their circle jerk about how service industry people are beneath them. But when you go and do stuff like this, it makes my job really effing difficult. To be entirely technical, it is a 25% tip at least. Plus, I've never done the DoorDash thing, so I don't really know what the delivery charges are in themselves. But I don't think even when I was delivering pizza back in the day, I would have complained about a $5 tip on a $20 order. That seems a bit excessive. Trust me, I have plenty of customers who would have no problem tipping $1 or $2 at most on that same order. So that seems like, even, I don't care how nice the house is, like, which it looks like from the Ring video that she took of the whole thing, but that's not even the damn point. Like, for as much as I believe that if you can't afford to tip, you can't afford to eat out, period, full stop, and that's always been the case and will always be my line of thinking, at the same point in time, don't bitch about getting a 25% tip. That's still, by most standards, pretty damn good. I mean, even if you do bitch about it, don't bitch about it directly to the customer. Probably not going to be a good way to keep you in a job for very long. It is Happy Hour at your local alternative, Solid State Radio. Stick around.
is Happy Hour at Solid State Radio as we get set to get the hell out of Dodge and turn things over to a full hour of local original music on a little show we like to call Solid State Sessions. Before we do that, though, we do have not quite breaking news per se, but we do have a tidbit or two to pass along with regards to the Red Wings' Alex DeBrincat saga. It sounds like, as of right now, the New York Islanders, who are the other contender in the DeBrincat sweepstakes, are about out of this thing. It's been reported now that NHL insider Elliot Friedman has disclosed that DeBrincat wants to play for the Red Wings and that the two teams are working on getting something done. There had been a potential deal that would have sent Jean-Gabriel Pageau back to Ottawa with the Islanders getting DeBrincat, but it sounds like that's not where he wants to be, which we talked a little bit yesterday. I mean, the Islanders are arguably in a better place right now than the Wings are. They've made the playoffs for the last 5 years. Even if the Wings seem to be getting close to finally breaking the playoff threshold, and maybe there really is something to this whole, well, guy wants to come back and play for his hometown thing. Now I feel like you're at the point where this thing's progressed so much that it is going to be kind of a disappointment, a major disappointment, honestly, if the Wings aren't able to get a deal done. It sounds like what's being reported, at least, is that there's a bit of a back and forth about the term of the deal and whether or not we might see a shorter term than the, I believe, 8 years it is that DeBrincat is looking for. The Ottawa Sun's Bruce Garriott reports that the Wings haven't been willing to go long-term with DeBrincat up to this point, but both sides are willing to perhaps compromise to see if there's a middle ground that would make a trade with the Senators work. Still no report, by the way. Like, we now know what was willing to be parted with on the Islanders' end to get this cat, but no word on what exactly the Wings would have to give up, whether it's going to be draft picks or, I mean, there was the talk about a couple first-rounders plus Zadina, which we saw where that went. No one wanted to take this guy, and he's getting his unconditional release from the team now. So apparently that wasn't a particularly tempting offer to Pierre. We're a team, Dorian. Who knew? Shocking. Not really sure either of whether another team is actually offering a longer-term deal, whether that's something that the Islanders would have even done. But it seems like a lot of the wind has been taken out of the sails now that we know that there's really only one team that he wants to go to, and there's really only one team other than the Islanders who seems particularly willing to play ball with the Sens at all. So, positive news, I suppose. It's at least going in the right direction, if nothing else. Hopefully we'll have a resolution to this here in the next couple days. We'll see if that's the case, but gotta be nice. It'd be nice to have that to look forward to going into this season. Anyway, I gotta get out of here. Sessions is up next, and we'll be back in tomorrow. All being well, we'll talk to you at 3. See ya.